Have you ever noticed how certain dreams sometimes can have an emotional impact on you? Have you ever had that happen? There's some dreams like when you wake up the next morning, you're glad you woke up, right? Like your immediate thought is, I'm so glad that was just a dream and not my reality because it was so unsettling, it was so disturbing, you just breathe a sigh of relief that you woke up, right? You've had those dreams? And then sometimes we have dreams that go the opposite direction where you wake up and you're like, I wish that was my reality, right? You're like, I wish I could just go back to sleep and pick up where I left off and just live out that dream. You've had those kind of dreams too, right? Yeah? How about the weird dreams? Like those dreams that are just totally off the wall. It's just this random mix of stuff like from your childhood and then from something that happened yesterday and then there's like a monkey in there somewhere and there's, I mean, just all this weird stuff that makes no sense and you're just like, what was that all about? And it's just totally confusing, right? So dreams can be confusing to us sometimes, and I think part of the reason is deep down inside we wonder, does this mean something? Is this dream telling me something? Is there a message I'm supposed to receive from this? Like, is this pointing me to something I should address in my life or something that might happen in the future? So that can be confusing to us. Another reason talking about dreams can be confusing is when we use the word dream, we're usually talking about two different things. Sometimes when we talk about dreams, we're talking about literal dreams, right? The random stuff that happens in our brains while we're sleeping. Sometimes that's what we mean when we use the word dreams. But other times, we're not talking about dreams while we're sleeping. We're talking about our hopes and dreams. Like the expectations of what I want to see happen in my life. Like, you know, my dream, that's my dream vacation. That's my dream car. I dream of getting married and having five kids and living in a big house. I dream of retiring in Hawaii someday. It's those kind of things, right? It's the hoped for expectation. That's our hope and that's our dream. So when we're talking about dreams, whether they're literal dreams or those hopes and dreams, the truth is God can work through both of those, and he often does. And sometimes there's a mix of the two, where sometimes our literal dreams we have while we're sleeping actually point to a deeper longing that's in our hearts. As we talk about the story of Joseph, and we started looking at his story last week, one of the things you notice in Joseph's life is that God used dreams a lot in Joseph's life. His story is one of a whole bunch of dreams happening. So the story kind of starts with Joseph having a dream of people bowing before him. Not in worship, but him being in a position of authority and people are bowing down in recognition of that authority. And he has that dream not once, but twice. And then as the story progresses, he ends up in prison. And while he's in prison, two different prisoners come to him and tell him about dreams they had that were troubling them. God gives Joseph the ability to interpret those dreams. And he says, here's what this dream means. And that opens the door for the next dream, which goes to the pinnacle of Joseph's story, where Pharaoh has a dream and Joseph is called before him and says, here's what this dream means. And as a result of that, Joseph is elevated to being the second most powerful man in Egypt. And that fulfills the original dream of people bowing down before him. So Joseph's story is a reminder that sometimes dreams can be used by God in our lives. They can be a big part of our lives, whether we realize it or not. One of the troubling things about dreams is those times when we have a dream of something that we hope will happen in our lives. It's that something that we're trusting God for, something that we say, well, I think God has given me this vision. I think God is going to do this in my life. I think God is going to do this through my life. And the dream is amazing. And we really want to see it happen, and we hope for it to come true, and we embrace it, and we pursue it. And then all of a sudden, life just derails those hopes and expectations. And it seems like because of what has happened in our lives, that dream will never, ever become a reality. And that struggle is the story of Joseph's life for much of his life. So let's take a look starting at his first dream that we read about. It's in Genesis 37, starting in verse 5. Here's what it says. One night, Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers about it, they hated him more than ever. Now, just to kind of kick back a little bit, they already hated him. We talked about this last week. Joseph was the favored child. He had 11 older brothers, and Joseph was the child that got all the special gifts, all the special recognition. He was a tattletale, and sometimes dad would encourage that. Dad would say, hey, your brothers are up to no good. I want you to go spy on them and report back to me, right? So they did not like Joseph at all. It was a bad relationship. But then when Joseph tells them, hey, here's this dream I had, they hated him even more because here's what the dream was. He says, listen to this dream. We were out in the field tying up bundles of grain. Suddenly my bundle stood up and your bundles all gathered around and bowed low before mine. So the dream is basically that they're all tying up these bundles of grain, these long stalks of grain, and Joseph stands up straight and his brother's bundles of grain, they bow down in front of Joseph's bundle of grain. So Joseph is excited about this dream, right? He's like, this has to mean something. And so he tells his brothers. And then God gives him another dream not long after that. Verse 9, just a couple verses later, it says, soon Joseph had another dream. And again, he told his brothers about it. Listen, I've had another dream, he said. The sun, moon, and 11 stars bowed low before me. So in this dream, it's not stalks of grain. It's actually him, and it's the sun and the moon and 11 stars. Now, he's obviously excited about these dreams, right? Because he's like, this has to mean something. God is revealing something to me about my future. And in his excitement, he does something incredibly foolish. He tells his brothers, and then he tells his father. We'll come back to that in a few minutes. For now, I just want us to focus on the fact that God gave Joseph a dream. Something that Joseph was realizing, God is going to do this in my life. This is a promise from God. I don't know exactly what it means, but this is a promise, and I really want this dream to come true. And yet it seemed really far off. It seemed like something that could possibly never happen. Have you ever had a dream like that? Something God placed on your heart, maybe a ministry, a vision he's given you, a calling, a passion he put in your heart, and you said, man, I really want this to happen in my life. I long for this to happen. I want this to be true. And you desperately want it, right? And it's like, if God did that in my life, that would be amazing. But it seems so far off. And every time you take a step closer to that dream, every time something happens that seems like this might move me towards that dream, it's immediately followed by something coming against you that knocks you back 5 or 10 steps in the opposite direction. And that's exactly what Joseph experienced. As I said last week, there's very few people who had more setbacks in their lives than Joseph. And just to give you a spoiler alert, his dream did come true, but there was a lot of twists and turns in the middle. There was a lot of setbacks and a lot of detours to where he thought this dream is never going to happen. And one of those detours, the first one that happened, was his family was very upset with him. So in verse 5, it says that his brothers hated him even more when he told them this dream. So that was kind of the start of it. But then on top of that, he tells his dad about this second dream, about the sun, the moon, 11 stars bowing down before him. He tells his dad about this, and his dad's response was not encouraging. In verse 10, his father scolded him. What kind of dream is that? That's quite a question. What kind of dream is that? He's like, you seriously think your brothers are going to bow down before you? You seriously think your mother and me, that we're going to bow down before you? What is wrong with you, right? So they're not happy with Joseph telling them about this dream. And that's understandable. Like if you had, I mean, how would it go if you talked to your family members and said, hey, I had a dream, you're all going to bow down before me. I don't encourage you to do that. It's probably not going to go well for you, right? And it didn't go well for Joseph. But putting that aside, the content of the dream, have you ever had that type of experience where, kind of like Joseph, you shared your dream with someone? Something that you say, God put this in my heart. This is a passion that I have now. I really want to see this happen. I'm really believing God for this. And you shared it with someone. And instead of them encouraging you, instead of them saying, wow, that's awesome, let's see what God does. Instead of them saying, hey, let's pray this through together, I hope it happens. No, instead they rain on your parade. And their response is, that's impossible. You're being unrealistic. That's never going to happen. You seriously think God would do that for someone like you? And that's what Joseph experienced. Complete opposition from his family. And it's hard to hold on to your dreams, isn't it? When everybody is opposing you. It's hard to hold on to your dreams and to have faith that it's going to happen when everyone around you is telling you it can't happen, it's impossible, it'll never happen. You're just being arrogant to think God would do that for you. It's hard to hold on to your dreams when people oppose you. It's also hard to hold on to your dreams when life opposes you, when you're faced with relentless obstacles that seem to push that dream further and further and further away. And again, Joseph experienced that. He has this dream that people are going to bow down before him, and then he's sold into slavery. Kind of the opposite. He has this dream that the sun and moon and stars are going to bow before him, and then he's falsely accused of something and thrown into prison. Kind of the opposite of that dream coming true. His dreams pointed to a promise given to him by God, and yet instead of experiencing that dream, he's thrown into this nightmare of betrayal and slavery, being falsely accused, thrown into prison, having a fellow prisoner say, "Hey, I'm about to get out. I'll put in a good word for you. You'll get out of here soon," only to be completely forgotten. And so it's kind of this pattern of having a hope, a dream, an expectation, and then that's followed very quickly by crushing disappointment. And maybe some of you have experienced that too in your life, where what you really long to see God do, it hasn't happened yet. What you really were hoping for, it just seems like everything is pushing that dream further and further away. And just like Joseph, every time it looked like things were going to get better, it just got worse and worse and worse. So how do you hold on to your dream when everything is opposing it? How do you hold on to your dream when everyone and every circumstance in your life is pushing it further away and telling you it will never happen? Well, there's a couple things that I think we need to know about God and how God works. And when I say we need to know these things about God, I don't just mean that we agree to them or we have some awareness of them. I mean, these are things we need to be radically convinced of. Like to the core of our being, that we say, okay, no matter what is happening around me, I believe this with all of my heart. I have faith in this regardless of my circumstances. I choose to embrace this truth about God. Here's the first one. God is up to something, even when I can't see it. God is up to something in my life, even when I can't see it. Now, Joseph discovered this. He came to this conclusion near the end of the story. And if we jump way ahead to chapter 50, there's this moment where his brothers, and this is years later, and Joseph is now the second most powerful man in the most powerful country on the planet. And his brothers have come to him for help, and now they realize who he is. And they are bowing before him, literally begging for their lives. The same brothers who betrayed him, talked about murdering him, sold him into slavery so many years before. And now Joseph has the power of life and death in his hands. And they realize, man, he could bring the hammer down and this could go really bad for us. And they are begging for their lives on their faces before their younger brother. And Joseph says to them these unforgettable words. He says, "What you intended for evil, God meant for good." You see, Joseph learned throughout this process, God was up to something, even when I had no idea that God was doing something good in my life. And let's be honest, it's hard for us to embrace that sometimes, isn't it? When we're in the middle of it, and everything is going wrong, and everyone is opposing us, and the prayers aren't being answered, and the things aren't working out the way we hope they will, it's hard for us to believe God is doing something good through this. Well, the good news is for us, when we can't see it yet in our lives, we have Joseph's story as an example. You know what? This is how God works. Because he saw it happen in his life. And there were moments in his life where nothing was working right, but then there was another moment in his life where he was able to look back and say, "Wow, God was doing something and I didn't even realize it." And when we can't see it in our own lives yet, we have stories like Job, who went through incredible tragedy and incredible trial, but his story serves as an example. This is how God works, because he saw it happen in his life. And the day came when he was able to look back and say, "Wow, I didn't see it at the time, but God was up to something good in my life." And when we can't see it in our lives, we have the story of Jesus. Because of what God did in that life, he was betrayed, he was mocked, he was crucified, buried. And on the third day, the disciples discovered, wow, God was up to something, and we had no idea. And there are countless examples of this all through the scriptures, of people coming to a point in time after going through trial, tragedy, doubts, unanswered questions, and all kinds of struggles, and finally one day being able to look back and say, "God was up to something, and I just didn't see it." It's like the story of the disciples when they're in the storm. They're on the boat out on the Sea of Galilee, and all of a sudden this massive storm comes up out of nowhere. and the boat's being tossed all over the place, and the waves are massive, and everything is just chaos, and they're freaking out. They think they're going to die. They think this is it. And Jesus is on the boat with them, but he's asleep. And so they're shaking him like, Jesus, wake up. Don't you care? We're going to die in this storm. And Jesus wakes up and he tells them to calm down. And then he tells the storm to calm down. And they both do. And that story serves as a reminder to us that the presence of a storm does not mean the absence of God. And that's true in our storms too. The presence of trials and tragedy in my life, the presence of doubts and fears and anxieties and unanswered questions, all of those things happening in our lives, they don't mean that we have been deserted. What they do mean is this: there's another chapter that is yet to come. You see, Jesus' story doesn't end with him in the tomb. There was another chapter yet to come. And Job's story doesn't end with him penniless in the dirt, being harassed by his self-righteous friends. There was another chapter yet to come. And Joseph's story doesn't end with him forgotten, left behind in prison. There was another chapter yet to come. And the same thing is true in your story and in my story. There is another chapter that is yet to come. It's important for us to remember that. And to remember that God is up to something, even when I can't see it. I think the other thing we need to be radically convinced of is this: that detours aren't always detours. We have this idea that our lives are going to go in this straight line, and everything that we think God is going to do in our lives is just going to work out perfectly. And we have it made up in our mind what that should look like, right? And usually there's a lot of twists and turns and back and forth and up and down in the middle of all of that that we didn't see coming. And we think, wow, this means God's plan is falling apart and it's not going to happen. But the truth is, those detours are not always actual detours. See, if you look at Joseph's story, if you only look at moments, at snapshots in the story, it looks like a really depressing story. It looks like a story that is filled with despair, like if you just take moments in time. So his brothers throw him into an empty well and talk together about how to end his life and get away with it. That's depressing. And then they see some slave traders traveling by and they say, hey, we can make money off of him. They sell their own brother into slavery. That's depressing. He's a hard worker. He's serving the guy that has purchased him, a guy named Potiphar. He's a man of integrity. He's serving Potiphar well. And then one day, Potiphar's wife tries to seduce him. And Joseph does the right thing. He runs out of the room and he says, I would never disobey God. I would never dishonor God by doing this. And because he chose the right thing, she lied about it. And she claimed he tried to rape her and he was thrown into prison as a result. That's depressing. And while he's in prison, he meets a guy and he interprets the dream for the guy. And the guy says, hey, I'm going to get out of prison soon. I'll remember you. I'll put in a good word for you. You'll be out soon too. And the guy completely forgets him. That's depressing, right? Like if you look at moments in time in this story, if you look at just a few of the snapshots, it looks like a really depressing story. But when we pan out and look at the whole story from start to finish and see how God was working through all of those moments, Joseph's story is a story that is filled with hope. And it's a reminder of God's faithfulness, even when it wasn't obvious to Joseph. And I think our stories are like that too. Where if we could take a step back and see the broader perspective of what God is really up to over a long period of time, instead of only those moments of intense pain that we all go through, instead of focusing just on that, but see, okay, God is doing something in the middle of this, that changes everything. And think about this, from Joseph's story, he's thrown into prison. He's sold into slavery. Those things were actually necessary for the dream God gave him years before to become a reality. See, being sold into slavery, that got him to Egypt, which was the center of power in the world at that time. And being thrown into prison, that got him to meet a guy who had a dream, who would one day stand before Pharaoh, who had a dream. And the guy would remember, hey, I know this guy named Joseph. He can interpret dreams. And now Joseph is the second most important man on the planet. So those detours in his life, they weren't actually detours. And maybe in your life, the stuff you're going through, maybe it's not a detour. It's not evidence that God has forgotten you or that God is angry with you or that God is judging you in some way. Maybe those ups and downs, the two steps forward followed by 18 steps back, maybe the rug being pulled out from under you. Could it be that all of that is actually what is required to prepare you, to equip you, for God to move things into place in your life for that dream he gave you to one day become reality. See, I think what we tend to do is when things don't go the way we hope they will or expect they will, we tend to assume that this means God's plan for me, it's not going to work out. It's just not going to happen. When the truth is that those dark and disappointing times in our lives, they don't derail God's purposes. They don't diminish his power. And they're not evidence of his absence or lack of concern. Sometimes those very setbacks in our lives, it's God rearranging things and moving things into place so that those dreams can become a reality. But it's happening in a way that we just don't understand. Detours are not always detours. There's one last thing I want to point out today from Joseph's life. In Genesis 39, verse 2. Oh, we're behind a little bit. Okay, I'll just go ahead and read it, and it'll eventually show up on the screen. In verse 2, it says this, "The Lord was with Joseph, so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master." So it says God was with Joseph, and this is as Joseph is a slave. And a few verses later in verse 21, it says, "But the Lord was with Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love." Going through Joseph's story, there are four times where it says God was with Joseph. Four times it tells us that. God was with Joseph when he was a slave. God was with Joseph when he was in prison. God was with Joseph, and other people noticed it. Potiphar noticed it in Joseph's life. Pharaoh noticed it. At one point it says that Pharaoh says this about Joseph, that he is, quote, obviously filled with the Spirit of God. God was with him and other people noticed it, and Joseph noticed it too. So how do you find God when you're at rock bottom? When everything is opposing you, when everyone is opposing you, when that dream is being pushed further and further away, and it looks like it will never, ever happen, and you are at rock bottom. How do you find God when you're there? Here's how. You notice him because he's there. You make a decision to see him because he is there. You see, we don't get to decide what happens to us, but we do get to decide where our focus is. We get to decide whether we notice God with us or whether we miss out on his presence with us. There's an example in the 23rd Psalm where David talks about two different things happening at once. So, for example, he says, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because you are with me." Two things happening at the same time. He says, I'm going through the valley of the shadow of death, a really bad place that nobody wants to be. And David says, that's where I am. This is true. This is happening. But he says, here's what else is happening. God is with me in the middle of that. You see, both are true. I'm in a really bad place right now, and God is with me in that really bad place. The question is, which am I going to focus on? Am I going to focus on where I am, or am I going to focus on who's with me in that place? He goes on and he says, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." So there's two things happening. I'm in the presence of my enemies. They're right there. I have enemies who despise me and they want to do really bad things to me. But God is with me too. Which of those two am I going to focus on? My enemies are here. God is here too. And he says, he's preparing a table for me. He's given me everything that I need in the middle of that time. But where is my focus? See, the question for us as we talk about accepting the unacceptable is not, will I ever have to face the unacceptable? The sad reality is, we all know the answer to that. The unacceptable happens. The real question is, what else is happening? What is God up to in the middle of that? And am I noticing that too? How do you find God when you're at rock bottom? You make a decision to notice him. Because he's right there with you. See, and that's the story of Joseph's life. The story of his life is not that he was betrayed by his brothers and thrown into prison. The story of Joseph's life is that God gave him a dream and God fulfilled that dream. Just like the story of Job's life, it's not a story of tragedy and despair. It's a story of renewal and hope. Just like the story of Jesus' life is not one of betrayal and crucifixion. It's a story of forgiveness, resurrection, redemption, and new life. And the story of your life is not the tragedy, the pain, the setbacks that you're going through right now. The story of your life, when the final chapter is written, will be that God fulfilled his purposes, including the dream he gave you. That in the middle of all of the twists and turns, the detours, the setbacks, the doubts, the fears, the unanswered questions, in the middle of all of that, he never left your side. He was right there with you the whole time. And somehow, even if you can't see it right now, you'll one day see that he was at work in your life behind the scenes in ways you just didn't realize at the time. I think it's important for us to ask God to renew our dreams. And I just want to take a moment and do that right now. Maybe you're here today and God has given you a dream at some point in your life. God put a passion in your heart, a vision of something he wants to do in your life, some way he wants to answer prayer, some way he wants to use you to touch the lives of others. But because of the opposition of other people or because of some terrible things that have happened in your life, that dream has kind of faded into oblivion and you think there's no way it's ever going to happen. I want to encourage you just to take a moment alone with God and just invite him to renew that dream within your heart. Not out loud, but just talking with him and just saying, God, would you restore that dream to me? I'm choosing to believe you, even though everything around me is saying it's never going to happen. God, I'm choosing to embrace the dream you've given me. I'm not going to give up on it. I'm going to hold on to it. So let's just take a moment just between you and God and just have that conversation with him. God, this morning we choose to believe that you are faithful, even when we can't see it. We choose to believe that you are good and loving, even when we can't see it. I pray, Father, that you would restore dreams that you have given people. Those visions, those hopes that you have put in people's hearts that have been clouded over by the difficulties of life. God, I pray that you would restore that and ignite a passion for those dreams. And I pray that you will help us when it's really hard to trust you, to believe you for the impossible. God, I pray that you will help us to continue moving in the direction that you've called us to move, even when it's hard. And for those who are here right now and they just feel crushed by life, Father, I pray that you would be for them the peace and the strength that they need right now. Your word tells us you are close to the brokenhearted. I pray that that will be our experience, Father. And I pray that in this next week, we will see answers to prayer, that we will see dreams coming true, that we will see your hand at work in ways we've never seen before, that we'll see things moving into place, that God, you really are there, you really are at work, you really are faithful. God, walk us through those times when it's hard to believe that. Strengthen our faith, Lord, when it's difficult. In Jesus' name, amen. I also wanted to share before we sing our closing song, a friend of mine from college, who was actually my roommate for a semester, named Warren, he wrote something on Facebook the other day, and it really grabbed my attention. I just want to share it with you. Here's what it says. I have two layers of light-blocking curtains in my bedroom. Despite this, even the tiniest crack, and I can see light in my room. Sometimes I think about how that light traveled across 93 million miles of cold space just to get through the crack in my curtains and warm up my room. It's very persistent. And then he wrote this. God's love is like this. It will find us in the darkest of places and times. So I just want to encourage you, if you're in one of those dark places right now, and you just need a reminder of God's light and God's love. When we're finished singing this morning, don't leave here until you get some help. Don't leave here until you pull one of us aside. Dwight's back there. Is Dan back there too? Okay. Dwight's there, I'm here, Sheila's here. We would love to pray with you, support you in any way that we can. If you need time alone with God, the prayer room is always open. Doesn't matter if we're singing, doesn't matter if it's a sermon, whatever. If you need time alone with God, you're welcome to spend some time in there. But if you would like one of us to pray with you or just to be a listening ear, we want to serve you in any way that we can. So please don't hesitate to pull one of us aside. But if you're in that place right now where it just feels like the curtains are closed and you're not seeing any light and you just need somebody to help you have some hope in the middle of that, please don't leave until you receive that this morning.